session number 30617.
Mr. John Morton, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Morton?
I was born in Old Trafford, which is a suburb of Manchester.
And what was the date?
29th of May 1922.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Yes. My father, he was a dentist. I was the youngest of seven children. We had four brothers, one whom died apparently at childhood, and also three sisters.
Had your father served in the First World War?
He did, yes.
Do you know much about him?
He didn't talk a lot about the First World War, but he was in the Manchester Regiment, which was based in Hardwick Green, I believe. Now, I wouldn't know which particular battalion he was in.
Did it affect him much, mentally or physically, do you think?
Not at all, no. Because he didn't go into action. I think mainly because they realised that he had a family of three at the time. And I believe really that held him back. You know, they probably sent younger men with less responsibilities. That's the way it looked out.
Now, so you were reasonably comfortably off as a family, were you? Although it was a large one.
Yeah.
What do you remember of your circumstances you lived in?
Considering people around us, we were quite reasonably well off. I wouldn't say rich, but we weren't poor. And we certainly had a better standard of living than most. For instance, other people would be on gas light, and we had electricity in the home. We had plenty of coal to keep warm, and we fed very well.
Now, what about your education? Tell us a bit about that.
Education, I went to the local council school, which turned out to be quite a good school, actually. I left at the age of 14.
And what did you enjoy or not enjoy? What were you good at, bad at school? Were there any particular subjects you liked?
I was particularly good at mathematics and science, and English not too bad, really. And I didn't particularly do well on the history. I also liked geography, and I wasn't particularly fond of having to learn French, for instance, which the school turned out to be quite a good one in terms of they had three streams, A, B and C. Now, if you were in the A stream, you had a far better education than the lads in B and C's. So, from that point of view, it turned out to be quite good.
Was there much sport at school? Were you good at sport?
Not terribly good. I liked cricket and running, but unfortunately, at the age of 11, I broke a leg. Yeah. So,
how did you manage that?
Acting silly on the children's playground. So that put me back quite a lot in terms of sport.
Now, so you left school at 14?
I did, yes.
Did you do your school certificate?
I didn't, no. But from this school, you could also carry on, which I did, in the evenings under the Lancashire and Cheshire education. And they ran this course for a further 2 years. So combined with that, I would go to evening school for 2 years and further my education in that respect.
Concentrating on maths and sciences.
That's right. And in that time, of course, I'd started an apprenticeship with a firm of motor engineers.
Now, so you were apprentice what?
As an apprentice motor mechanic.
With a garage? Or
with a garage, yes.
Do you know which one?
Kennings, it's called. I believe it still exists today.
So you started that at 14?
I did, yes.
So that's 1936. And were you doing that till you... you were doing... How long did you do that for?
I then stayed there until the age of 17.
So that's 1939?
That's right. By which time the war had started. But in between time, I'd then done this other 2 years with this education at Lancashire and Cheshire. I then took up City and Guilds in motor engineering at the local technical school.
Full-time or night school
still? Evening school, I was always, yes.
So you carried on at the garage even after 39?
No, I then things got rather slack there.
That was a war start. Well, tell me about do you remember the day war broke out?
I do, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, the day war broke out, here again, we were fortunate enough to have a car. We had a car in the early 20s, I think 1928, yeah. So on that particular day, I'd gone out with my mother and father, and we travelled to Derbyshire. And as it happened, at the time the war broke out, we were parked up at Monsell Head, just outside the public house there. And we went inside the pub to hear this announcement that war had broken out. So, of course, we made our way back. And
how did you feel? How did the family react?
I think we were very shocked indeed. You know, we couldn't believe that it happened so quickly, although it obviously... things were brewing up that way, and it's obvious that there was something going to happen. But it would have to be on a Sunday. I'm pretty certain of that because that's when we would be out.
It was.
But I always remember on the return journey and how things got on the way back as we approaching home. It was dark, and my father was driving with his headlights on, and of course the police stopped him immediately. So it's pretty quick. The police and the local were pretty quick onto that. You know that we mustn't show any lights. You see, so that was that my first day of the war. That's how it all started.
Now, what happened next then? How soon was it before you lost your job?
I didn't lose it. The fact that things were very slack there and they were giving us menial things to do. Rather than hang around, just clean this. And that didn't suit me at all. I wasn't that sort of a lad. I was there to learn things. So I then changed to another company called Parker's, who had a contract to overhaul and repair vehicles for the MOD.
Minister of Defence?
Yeah.
So what was that work like?
So when I went there, I went as a mechanic, but with all this paperwork that was involved with the MOD, and costings and this sort of thing, the managing foreman there didn't seem to be able to cope with that, and he noticed that I was quite good at that sort of thing, And so I finished up that costing these jobs and dealing with what they called embodiment loan. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Can you explain it?
Yeah, well, embodiment loan was a system that the MOD had between themselves and contractors, whereby any spares or equipment that they had, the government, they could transfer it to the contractor to do the particular job. So that was what it was all about. And there's a lot of paperwork involved with that. And I suddenly realised then I was more cut out for administration, really, than doing the manual work. So that's where I stayed then, until our main showroom on Deansgate was bombed out, and so Mr. Parker decided that we would have to move out to his first showroom and works in Bolton. So then we find ourselves travelling from Manchester, Old Trafford, to Bolton every day. And this was rather arduous, because in the meantime I'd joined the LDV, or the Home Guard.
Let's go back a bit then and do some of these other parts. So when did you actually start working in Bolton? Because I presume you left after a while. We'll come to that later. But
yeah,
what year was...
I'd start, as I say, in 39.
And when did you finish?
Well, I finished there in 43.
Now, tell me about... Let's look at the bombing altogether first, and then we'll look at your LDV. So, what air raid precautions were there? Can you tell us about the blackout first? Because, funnily enough, you mentioned with the car and the... How much did the blackout affect you and your family? I mean, what did you have to actually do to the house?
Well, very much so. We had to have blackout curtains, for instance.
Were they special curtains? I mean,
not special, but they had to be thick enough not to emit any light. And also, we had to put a type of tape on the glass to stop any shattering. Also, we had to join our next door neighbour. We were in a semi-detached situation, who had agreed to have an air raid shelter built in their cellar.
Now, in their cellar?
Yes.
Not an Anderson or anything?
Oh, no, it was built in their cellar, and very strong wooden construction with bunks and so forth down there. So any air raids, our family would, well, the number of, how many in the family would there be then? Or the father? There'd probably be three of us left then out of the seven, that's right. We would supposedly make our way down to this air raid shelter.
Now, what was it like? I mean, how reinforced was it? I mean, what had they done to make it different from your cellar?
Well, for instance, it had very strong ceiling beams and
they'd been put in
stanchions. Oh, yes, indeed, yeah. And it was very, very stout indeed.
And what was it like in there?
Very cosy indeed. But obviously...
Did they have furniture in there or benches?
No, mainly bunks in there. But if we got on well with our neighbours, otherwise it wouldn't have been so comfortable. But of course, more often than not, I wouldn't go down there. I would stick it out if I was in bed, and my mother and father getting quite upset about it. But of course I had a pretty busy life, so I felt I had to get some sleep in, and so I would sleep through some of the air raids.
Now, when did the raids start, as far as you were concerned? What do you remember of the German air raid?
Oh, very much so. I It started at the, it would be about the Christmas of 1940, that's right. And I remember it well. I was going on home guard duty, and I was all dressed up with a rifle I had at home. And as I was leaving home, the first thing I was confronted with, apart from all the noise of anti-aircraft guns going off, was this flailing flame coming towards me down the pathway, which I was quite startled about. And I remember I had some heavy boots on because I was going on duty. I kicked this and it spun round and went into the middle of the road. Of course, it turned out to be an incendiary bomb, this, which I didn't know. So there it was, flaring away, and my father comes out with a bucket of water, and I think it's the only time I ever swore at my father and called him a bloody fool, you know, because that wasn't the thing to do. But of course, he'd already done this, and the whole thing sort of flared up. So that was my first impression. And whilst all this was going on, all these, our windows, which had been taped up, had all been shattered. Because
so it wasn't just incendiaries, it was explosive, high explosive bombs as well.
Oh, they were coming down further down the road. In fact, I'm talking about, and there were these screaming bombs that were coming down. And that would be some sort of maybe 300 yards away they hit properties. So then,
and how much damage was done in that raid?
Quite a lot, really. It's more than I realise. It was pretty well spread out, you know. It wasn't a concentrated bombing. It's just as though they were obviously making for Trafford Park, which was quite close. But we got it where we were, and anyhow, that was the Christmas.
Was it actually Christmas Day or just,
well,
Christmas time?
No, it's Christmas time.
So December, we left it December.
Yeah, it would be December, yeah. And then the other thing I remember, I then went on, I was going on night duty, I had to go on guard all night, you know.
Now, tell me about the Home Guard generally. When did you join the Home Guard?
Well, I joined, I suppose, as soon as it came on the radio.
Would that be sort of after Dunkirk, June 14th?
Oh, yeah.
And what happened when you went to join it? Where did you go?
It'd probably be before then, because it was when it was called the LDV, because I always remember on the way back, and I was proudly wearing this armband with LDV, and this girl shouted at me, "LDV, look, duck and vanish," which I was very pleased about.
So when do you think it was?
Well, September 39. It'd be more like late 39, I would think, too.
So December 39 or something?
Yeah, around about then it would be, yeah.
And what happened when you went to join it? Where did you go?
I joined at the local police station. And then the barracks was the Royal Engineers Barracks, which was stationed in Old Trafford. And I forget the actual battalion, but I was with them from then on till I joined.
Now, what was this? When you first joined, you were given your armband. Was anything else happen? Or you didn't get a uniform, did you? Not then.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we had a denim uniform, and later on,
a khaki denim.
Yeah, yeah. And later on, like, we, I was actually, because I was quite good on the rifle range, I was a sniper, so I had a camouflage suit as well, which was rather...
Now, take me through the training. You do this at the Royal Engineers Barracks.
That's right, yes.
Now, so how did this start, training? Was there a special night, or...?
Special nights, and then we had to do one night on all-night duty.
Now, training first, because... Yeah. So how did they start training you?
Well, training was very much into a drill, for instance, and general discipline.
How did you take to
how to handle a rifle.
How did you take to drill, then?
Not particularly well. I was never...
Why not? What was the problem?
I was never a military type of person, really, but I did it, and I just took it as something I had to do, you know.
What about rifle training? Tell me, because you did well at that. Tell us,
yeah.
How did they actually train you?
Well, that was very good, because they used to take us on a rifle range outside north of Ashton on Underline somewhere, Holcombe it was called, that's right, and it was a proper military rifle range out there with all the butts, and we used to get good practice out there, and then we would take a turn in actually working in the butts and giving signs with the, whether it was an in or outer or what have you, with this this disc on the end of a stick, and you'd just point this up above the butt, you know, where you were.
Now, how did you take to right? I know you were good, because you said you were a sniper, but I mean, how did they teach you to be a good shot, or was it just natural?
I think it was a natural thing, really. Yeah.
What do you think made you a good shot, then?
Well, because I was always keen on pistols, and I had air guns and things like that, and we didn't use them in any malicious way. I used to have targets in the backyard and this with darts and pellets and things, and I had a Diana rifle, and I never hurt anybody with it. It was always purely I like to shoot at targets, and that was from a very, very early age.
So you just took to the bigger... What about the impact on your shoulder? It didn't affect you? You were
not
all right?
Not at all, no, no.
Yeah. So what other training did you get? There's drill, rifle training?
Yes.
What else?
Well, I did a very useful thing, which came into use later on in life, and that was first aid. I did a St. John's course with first aid.
Now, how far did you get with first aid? What were they actually teaching you?
With the first aid? Well, the resuscitation, emergency bandaging, and, it's quite good.
Anything else you were trained in? Any other weapons?
There was one called, it was on an exercise that we did, and on this particular occasion, we were defending the local town hall at Stretford, and another chap and myself. It was a weapon that needed two people, and it was called a North Over... something like North Over projector, and this was like a bazooka type of weapon, which we had to take on up to the roof of one of the local warehouses, which was presumably a strategic position to take up. So that was quite interesting.
And how did this thing work?
Well, we never actually operated it, but apparently, you just put the a projectile in the end and fired the thing at, but we never actually got to use it.
And what was the tactical exercise like? I mean, how did it work? It was it a street fighting exercise or what was it?
Oh yeah. The army were moving in to take over the town hall, and we were there to defend it, and apparently it was all a matter of points, and if we spotted them, you know, we'd record this, and this would then calculate whether in fact we'd got a hit or a miss. I mean, there's no actual weaponry, you know, no firing yet.
Do you do any other tactical exercises? What were they like?
Well, we did others that were house-to-house stuff, which was quite interesting. And
so how were you meant to do houses? That's street fighting, isn't it?
Yeah.
How were you meant to do it?
Well, the idea was, to first of all, to know your area. You know, it was in our particular area on that occasion. And you'd have the enemy. They would be located in various positions, and you had to suss them out, find them, and find ways of getting at them without being seen.
So how are you meant to do this house-to-house business?
Yeah. Well,
how?
Well, how? It was all a matter of, as I say, knowing the area and knowing how you could get. We would know that the enemy was located in a particular house, which would be an empty house, and we'd figure out how we could get there without being seen. So it's a question of creeping round walls or the way you approached it.
Any other tactical training?
Not in terms of fighting, no.
Now, tell me about patrols or guard work duties then with them.
Yeah, well, guard work was usually we would be on guard all the evening, either at the town hall, which was quite a cushy number there, because you were mainly down indoors and just outside on guard. But the other locations would be the local station or railway bridges. Now, one particular bridge I was on in Old Trafford, King's Road, again, there was another air raid, and I witnessed quite a most amazing thing when I was on there, because all of a sudden I saw these lights in the sky, and drifting down on parachutes were these drums, what I thought, which turned out to be landmines. Now, this was near the Old Trafford cricket ground, and they actually landed in that area at some probably 500 or 600 yards away. But when I went to have a look the next day, they'd been disarmed, because they hadn't in fact exploded, otherwise goodness knows what would have happened. So that's how near I've been to that on that score.
Anything else happened while you were on guard?
No, not really. You know, it's just the fact that we were there, you know, and we were never, unlike probably people on the down the south coast would be expecting invasions. I don't think we really expected being confronted with the enemy in that respect.
Did you do patrols at all?
Yeah, that's what I say. I did all night.
Well, I thought they were guards. There's a difference. Guard duty sort of.
Yeah, well, that was patrolling, really. In terms, as I say, the guard duty was at the town hall, but these others on the bridges and stations, you know, railway stations.
That was a patrol. They were going between those points.
Correct, yeah.
And anything ever happened on a patrol? Not other than this parachute man, that's about it.
Yeah, well, that's about the most exciting night. I think that was enough.
Anything else happened, you know, before you were called or called up a volunteer? We don't know. Anything else happened?
Well, as I say, the other thing that happened was when I was at with Parker's, when the showroom on Deansgate. Now, Deansgate got...
Now, tell me about
very,
that.
Very badly bombed, that Deansgate. Well, when I turned up for work, the boss said, oh, have you seen the showroom? So we hadn't, so he said, well, we'd all better get up there and see what we can do. Well, when we saw this showroom, which had all these high-class Dodge cars and Jaguars, and the whole thing was all charred out. And the interesting thing was that there was a lift there which elevated the cars onto the first and second floors. It was quite a tall building. Now, with all the heat of the incendiaries and the fire, this lift shaft had dropped from the top to the ground floor. And as it happened, they had to be a very expensive Rolls Royce, which belonged to, I can't remember the names, but anyhow, they're well-known pianists in those days. And this was a complete wreck down in the basement. So that was what we were confronted with.